Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Atlanta is Stephen Paskoff. Steve is the president and CEO of Eli. And today we're going to be talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion and some of the compliance considerations. First of all, Steve, thanks for taking the time to talk to us again.
Adam, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure as well. Now, your roots in diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts go back a long ways. You shared with me an article you wrote back in 1996, in fact, on the topic. While it's becoming a much more powerful movement, you're eager to point out that there are legal considerations for employers. Can you quickly recap what they are?
Yes, and I want to note that my roots go back a bit further. I was originally an investigator, trial attorney for the EEOC, and then defended, represented employers in a management law firm. And when I wrote that article in 1996, I had been in the field since the early 70s. And I saw what was happening is that diversity and inclusion, and it was mostly called diversity then, was treated as separate and apart from equal employment principles, and they're closely related. The problem is that sometimes the core principles of equal employment opportunity and civil rights were not considered in the way some initiatives were launched. That would be stereotyping people, and even in some instances, allowing a form of differential treatment that could give rise to their own claims of discriminatory lawsuits, claims, and exposure, which is contrary to what the entire movement is about.
Wow. Yeah, it's one of those things that doesn't get talked about, but you know, employers certainly should consider. So what are some of the ways that well-intentioned DE&I efforts can get an employer in legal hot water?
The intentions are not the issue. The intention is to build, as I understand it, an equitable, fair workplace environment. When I say fair, where there are not barriers linked to things like race and sex, religion, age, national origin, disability, characteristics. And how you do it is what the issue is. Sometimes employers have allowed conduct in learning and initiatives that, if you look at it from an equal employment point of view, would be viewed as A, disparate treatment, and B, in a sense, almost fostering a form of systemic discrimination against one group. You could have initiatives that say that we are going to explain to you why, if you come from this group, you have certain inherent characteristics that you have to overcome as an impediment because of who you are. If that had been focused on another group, people would say that is improper discrimination, not supported by legal principles and in violation of them. Sometimes systems of advancement may give advantages to one group without a foundation properly based on legal principles, and that can be a problem no matter who the group is. So there's no way to do this without keeping the law in front, and it should be because it's actually conceptually related, not antagonistic, to the principles of diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Now, when we were talking before this, you share with me that language is key. Putting things in the right terms can help win support for DE&I initiatives, but the wrong words can ruin one. What have you found to be the best ways to address diversity, equity, and inclusion?
One problem that you have is you're trying to get people to see the workplace as a place where there are consistent forms of treatment and evaluation. To me, what that suggests as the way to approach that is to take a look at the organization's values, which typically talk about respect, inclusion, and fairness, say they apply, and then say that it requires certain kinds of behavior that were afforded to everyone that in turn help build an organization that's stronger and improve results. The idea of the mission should be, in my view, to include everyone in the initiative, to give everyone a stake and a responsibility for behaving in line consistently with your values, no matter who you are, the level that you're in, or what your role is. sometimes what initiatives do is label one group again at fault because of birth characteristics like race, ethnicity, or gender, and say, because you are born this way, you have to change because you are born from a group that has been afforded certain advantages. Now, the reality is that systemic discrimination still exists. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission has a pattern and practice unit. Cases are brought across the country individually and by class action lawsuits and upheld, not all, but they're upheld, meaning that the principle of systemic discrimination does exist. But if you want individuals to change, labeling them as a certain way without giving them an opportunity to be involved in the initiative, it creates a barrier, divisiveness, and a backlash, which can undermine the principles of your initiative, as well as creating legal risk.
And obviously people are not out for that. Now, one of the things I want to shift a little bit as we have this discussion is the idea of civility. You're a strong advocate for civility in the workplace. First, I think before we get into this a little more, can you define what you mean by civility?
That's a good question, because each organization has to define it from a behavioral point of view. Basically, it should have standards of what you say and what you don't say. And in my view, it's a two-way commitment. Sometimes there are blurry areas as to what is civil or not. It's easiest things to say is there are certain things that you cannot say to another person. We're not going to tolerate racial or sexual jokes, banter, and the like. There are other areas where what's appropriate to allow discourse and conversation and interaction and a comfortable environment for raising issues and ideas can blur based on facts. You have to have an environment where people will speak up freely and identify not just conclusions, but behaviors that support them so they can be identified, talked about, and adjusted. Sometimes there are actions that are innocent and or misunderstood. And if they're not raised and they're not talked about, you have resentment and frustration, and the person who's doing the behavior may not know about it. So you have to have an environment where speaking up is critical. And if I can make a generalization, which I generally don't like to do, Adam, one of the biggest issues in compliance in general is to having a workplace where people feel comfortable speaking up. And when they do, it's a two-way conversation. It's not just one way. It goes back and forth. And that is, to my way of thinking and what we talk about at our organization, the way that you help welcome concerns and issues to minimize risk, but even more positively to help generate better results.
So let me just do a little bit deeper dive for a moment. I mean, are we talking about speaking respectfully? Is that part of this, something different, a synonym?
In terms of civility?
Yeah, sorry.
Well, civility is so broadly defined. In my view, it means that not using the kinds of outrageous words that I said is critical. Not screaming, not yelling, not making accusations, and failing to listen to another perspective is also critical. Body language and tone of voice, particularly now when we're seeing people more than interacting with them in person, is absolutely vital too. But it's a way of communicating, which some have called polite, but it's a way that's designed to allow people to speak up, talk about issues, focus on what needs to be done, and raise concerns and ideas as issues do arise.
So how can civility help us foster a diverse, equitable, and inclusive environment?
Because it provides a platform of consistency that everyone can sign on to as citizens of their organization. The idea is you're saying, look, no matter who you are, no matter what you look like, no matter where you're from, here are our values that apply to all of us. That will be translated into behaviors. And no matter what you do, there are certain things you don't do. If you're the CEO of the company, you do not do them. If you're an entry-level employee, they apply to you as well. so you have a consistent framework of behavior that fosters consistent interaction norms from everybody, irrespective of background.
And ideally create an environment where everyone feels safe and included. Well, Steve, I want to thank you for sharing these insights with us. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCC and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.